This is Jim Inkster coming on Talk Louisiana Today. We'll visit with State Representative Rick Edmonds. He'll talk about his quest to become the Secretary of State. He's running for the seat vacated when Tom Shedler resigned and now occupied by Kyle Ardoin, who also is in a large field of candidates. Also on the show today, we'll talk with Mike Sandlin. For 31 years, he's run the Tiger Truck Stop. He's the owner of that landmark in Gross Tate, and he's had many battles through the years with his tigers at the truck stop. And Tony the Tiger, his most recent feline, died at the age of 17 a few weeks ago. Now there is a new attraction, a camel. We'll talk to Mike Sandlin about the camel at the Tiger Truck Stop. And Rene Uzzi, his book is Yellow Jack, about the New Orleans yellow fever epidemic of 1853. Now the news. This is Talk Louisiana. Thank you for listening to WRKF, and our producers are Ali Baltazar and Becca Dill. I'm Jim Inkster, and we start the show today with Rick Edmonds, the state lawmaker elected in 2015, Baton Rouge Republican, and he is now seeking the office of Secretary of State, the third office, highest office in the state of Louisiana. And it is a pleasure to share the microphone with you, Representative Edmonds. Good morning.
Good morning, Jim. How are you? It's a beautiful day, isn't it?
It's a beautiful day. You're right. It's a little warm, but hey, I'll take it.
Now, we know where we live, and it's always that way, right?
Right. Well, before we get to your campaign, you're an active pastor, aren't you?
I am. I've been able to serve as a pastor now for over four decades, so I'm just a blessed guy. Cindy and I are so thankful for the things we've gotten to do over our lives and are still doing. Enjoy it so much.
Well, if you'd like to talk to Representative Edmonds, 877-217-5757, wherever you are. And if you're in the Baton Rouge area, 297-5633 works. And you can call us at send us an email at talk@talklouisiana.org. Well, as far as the field for the office, there was a late entry in Kyle Ardoin. Were you surprised that he is in the race?
We were. Sitting in the legislature, I was in House and Governmental Affairs back in May, and Mr. Ardoin came in and gave his explanation of how he intended to, run the office of great importance in the sort of transition period, and so we took him at his word on that, and I mean, it was quite surprising.
Did you talk with him before he made his announcement?
I did. I qualified on that Friday, that morning. I was the first one in at 8 o'clock, and we had a tremendous experience with him that day, and felt very strong that he was not only not going to enter the race, but of course was going to continue to hold the line until one of us could get elected, and then be able to look forward to moving the department forward.
I've gotten some emails from listeners, obviously anticipating your appearance on this show, one stating that the two of you actually prayed together. Is that accurate?
It is accurate, and I appreciate that. I'm a man of faith, and I didn't request or require any of those things, but I'm always honored when someone wants to pray with you and pray your best favor and blessings and protection over you. I always feel that way.
Well, you have signed a 10-point pledge. I presume you'd like for the others in the race to do the same. What exactly are the 10 points that you believe are relevant to this position and as far as overall integrity as a public official?
Well, I think that Jim, even as a legislator, I've really pressed for transparency in government. And, with trust at an all-time low nationally, as it relates to politicians, and of course, very low here in Louisiana as well. I would like to see us really take a step forward where people could really believe that if you say you're going to do something, then that's what you're going to do. And, I've asked multiple times and tried to pass a few bills this past year and each year dealing with transparency issues. I just believe that the public deserves to know the truth. We don't always get it right, but when we tell the truth, people respond, and I believe they give you the benefit of the doubt to try to go back and then fix a thing. And I just think that's good government. And so we've gone around the state now on our integrity tour with those kinds of issues, with issues like transparency and trust and honor and just being, you know, transparency is so important, but also the word integrity, it just means that it's who you are when nobody's looking. And, you know, that I've sort of tried to live my life. I've been married now with my wife for 44 years. I've got four great sons and four wonderful daughter-in-laws, and I've just tried to live family, conservative principles my life, and I'm not bragging about that. I've had a lot of help and a lot of blessings, but I believe that's very important to the constituents of the state of Louisiana.
We're visiting with Representative Rick Edmonds. He is the person who represents District 66 in Baton Rouge, works as a senior advisor at Bethany Church. He has signed a 10-point pledge to, I'm going to read through some of these if we can get through, exercising moral courage to hold himself and others accountable for their actions, to avoid impropriety and refrain from misusing an official position to secure unwarranted privileges, to accept the responsibility to expose corrupt or unethical behavior, to protect the public trust by exercising honesty and ensuring transparency, to treat every person with dignity and respect, to act in a professional, responsive, and courteous manner, to conduct his private affairs in a manner that minimizes the risk of real potential or perceived conflicts of interest, to advocate and promote the most efficient, effective, and equitable way to deliver public services without prejudice or discrimination, to refrain from retaliation or condoning retaliation against those who have exposed corrupt or unethical behavior, and to support the public's right to know the truth and encourage diverse and civil public debate in the decision-making process. Would you encourage everybody in the field to sign the same pledge you did, Representative Edmonds?
Well, of course, you know, I would be elated for all of us to have those kind of commitments. I am signing that pledge in every city, and I'm asking folks to, with the cell phone age, I'm asking folks to take pictures of that when I want them to be able to record. And I've told them I'm not worried about signing it because I really feel like that I have and will continue to live according to these guiding values. And I want them to have a record of it. Now, they can hold me accountable, and I have absolutely no problem with that. In fact, I look forward to that that challenge.
Now, many people in public life probably could not live up to these 10 points, and some would say the President of the United States would have some difficulty with some of these. Do you encourage, let's say this catches on, like would you encourage our congressional delegation and the governor and the President of the United States to sign on off on this as well?
I do. I think there's some critical areas in that. You know, whether you mentioned in that, whether it's knowing the truth or treating people fairly. These are just common practices, and I've said this multiple times, really, there should be no reason to even have to print these things. These are things that every public servant should live by. They're guiding principles and values that people like our parents and our grandparents have guided for me. And listen, I'm no perfect guy. I don't mean any of that at all. I just mean someone sets the bar and says this is the point you should live by and shoot for. And I have had a father like that, and I've had a mother like that, and a father-in-law, and teachers and coaches that have really pressed those issues for me in my life. I'm so grateful for those that have trained me up all my the days of my life.
Now, you mentioned you and your wife Cindy have been married 44 years, four grown.
Yes, sir.
Children, eight grandchildren. My guess, Pastor and Representative Edmonds, is that you've never been unfaithful to your wife.
Never. I'm just in love with her. We are. We've just been blessed. We grew up in Shreveport together. My dad and her dad were best friends in high school. Her dad called my football and basketball and baseball games all the way through high school. I mean, it sounds like a story, but it really is our story, and we're blessed.
If a public official has committed adultery, perhaps many times, and of course, as we know, some public officials revel in this sort of thing. Maybe they've been divorced a few times. Should they resign their office?
Well, you know, I don't sit here on the phone today as a judge. I'm not a judgmental person. But, you know, when you move some of these things into what you do into office, you know, I certainly believe that people have the right to their private lives. But when it crosses the line in offices, not just this office, but multiple offices that we have now that we've gone through, and it just continues to plight these political offices. That becomes something that I believe then the people begin to lose trust in our leadership, and they should. I mean, when we cross those lines and have relationships and offices, and then it gets out of hand and out of balance. Again, I'm not just talking about this office. I'm talking about, you know, you've been interviewing folks for years and years, and you know the stories nationally that have occurred, and then people just they don't trust us anymore. And I don't know how to explain our way out of that. It's just the way that it is. People build their ideas about what a leader should be. And, you know, I didn't write that any more than you did.
Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on the air with Representative Edmonds. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Yeah, Representative Edmonds, in conjunction with your 10-point pledge, which I heartily agree with, do you think that the oil and gas industry should be held accountable for the damage it's done to our environment and to pay the taxpayers back for it?
I think I heard him, Jim, to say about the oil and gas industry, about damage done to the environment. Was that correct, Dan?
Yes, that is correct. That's what he said, that they should be held accountable, and he asked if you believe that.
Well, and I believe that, you know, there are some, of course, we see multiple times where, again, something like the BP oil spillage, which is a mega problem, and billions of dollars of recourse back on a particular company like that. I don't think you can ever pay it all back, but I do think that we see that those folks are attempting to put back in what they've been demanded to do. Whether or not all of that was their fault on a drilling rig and how all that occurred, I mean, I'm not an expert on that.
Okay, we do have to take a pause, but we'll be right back with Representative Edmonds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with State Representative Rick Edmonds, Republican for Baton Rouge. He is striving to become the Secretary of State. The election, special election, is the 6th of November. 877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. Now, Representative Edmonds, the President of the United States, has stated that he believes 3 to 5 million fraudulent votes were cast in the 2016 election. What will you do in Louisiana to make sure there is election integrity?
Well, there's a couple of things that's going to that we want to continue to ensure that only American citizens who are registered to vote in Louisiana vote, and that their vote counts. I think that's critical. Our security issues are very obviously. There's lots of folks have with all the headlines. There's a whole lot of wondering about cybercrime and cyber. Attacks and whatnot. So we'll do everything we can with new technology, and even if we have to, we'll form a cyber division if we have to in the Secretary of State's office to make certain that security is a number one issue, that the voters have complete confidence in our elections. We will strive with our new voting machines that will occur during the tenure of this office to make certain that we have our same kind of watchdog mentality that we've had in the legislature. We're going to bring that to the Secretary of State's office.
Now, there is evidence that Russia interfered with the 2016 election, tried to even get into voting machines. Tom Shedler, your predecessor, if you're elected, says there was no indication at all that anything like that happened in Louisiana. But there's no indication that Vladimir Putin has changed his ways. Are we ready for any kind of chicanery from Russia or other countries who would like to disrupt our elections?
Yeah, I think that it has to be a front burner issue because the citizens demand it. And we have, right now we can't do online things that, like whether it's registering or doing our votes and transferring after election, like election returns. We're not doing that currently online. And I don't think that we have the firewall protection yet to do those kind of things. So we will be very, very conservative of how we continue to protect elections, and we have to be. We will look into every one of those details.
John in New Road says, I love Representative Edmonds' Pledge of Allegiance to the Common Good. Edwin in Gonzales asks, are you a supporter of the president? Do you think President Trump's doing a good job?
Well, you know, I think President Trump has done a really good job on the economy. We have evidence of what's happening, and of course, unemployment now is going down. Almost every month we're getting additional reports. The tax change has now brought millions of dollars not only back into the state of Louisiana, but across America. So I think all of those are very positive things that are going on, and I think they're going to continue to go on. He's really put a lot of foot forward, as he promised, on business. And I'm a very strong proponent of small businesses and large businesses doing well. I think it really will stabilize our economy. We really need that. We're lagging behind here in Louisiana. We really, really need it.
Do you think the president, is a man of high moral fiber?
Well, I try to watch as much as I can, Jim, about what I see. I try to do the same thing with what I think is fake news or this or that. I don't see anything. There's not been anything reported besides the things that we have to wade through to decide what's true or not. So up to this point, obviously, there's nothing, no condemning factor that has been proven.
Well, it does appear that he was unfaithful to his wife. And we're talking about right after she gave birth to a child with not only a pornographic film star, but a Playboy playmate. His alias at the Beverly Hills Hotel was David Dennison. Other office holders through the years have been run out of town based on allegations that were much less than this. Why does the president, as Tony Perkins says, get a mulligan?
Well, I when you asked the question, we're talking about since he's taken office as president. I'm trying. That's two particularly different subject matters. As we look at lives of presidents, whether they're, you know, John F. Kennedy was in office and alleged all kinds of things. But I'm talking about since he's been elected. You know, there hasn't been anything that yet has condemned him, that he's living something that is. I don't know if he's unfaithful to his to his wife currently. I have no idea. I have no evidence of it, and I don't think anybody else does either.
Jim on Jones Creek. Jim, you're on with Representative Edmonds.
Wow, there's a lot of moral tap dancing going on. So the tariffs that the president has enacted that are negatively affecting Louisiana's economy and are poised to do even more damage, those are the positive things that you're saying that he's done and that you support so much?
All right. Well, the president has announced that there is $12 billion in aid coming to farmers who are affected by the tariffs. But, Jim asked the question, Representative Edmonds, what about the tariffs? Are those good for our country?
Yeah, I was referring to some other business stimulus or the tax change that I think that obviously has been good for business and for people that have already seen money back in their pockets. So I feel like those kind of factors, maybe some return of some business and industry of things that we've seen, some things occur. We don't have a record yet to see how the tariffs in the long term are going to affect us. I think that is a short term. We are very concerned here in Louisiana, but long term, we're not certain of the national and international debate that will go on, that sometimes these tariffs have a way of turning. So I'm not sure in a year from now that we'll have that same discussion, Jim. I'm hoping that that will see the negotiations change, and I think that's what the president is attempting to do, is to level the playing field with some of the unfair practices with other nations internationally.
Well, Representative Edmonds, thanks for joining us, and it's always a pleasure to talk with you, and we look forward to our next conversation.
Jim, I appreciate it. Hope your audience has a great day, and you as well. I appreciate your show.
And good luck with your campaign.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're joined now by Mike Sandlin. For 31 years, he's owned the Tiger Truck Stop in Gross Tate. And through the years, there has been an array of Tigers that are on display, but no longer. A 2006 state law bans private ownership of large and exotic cats. Tony, the beloved Tony, was grandfathered in because he had been living at the truck stop since 2001. He lived to be almost 18 years old. And lived much longer than most of the Mike the Tigers at LSU, who, of course, live in a $5 million habitat. Now, Mike Sandlin is trying to keep the reputation alive as a truck stop that has an attraction. And my goodness, there is a new attraction at the Tiger Truck Stop, but it's not a tiger. Mike, what's going on there?
Well, we have, for the first time in 30 years, there's not a tiger living there in Grove State, and I think it's a tragedy. We've tried to solve the problem with the state, and there's been some movement, but nothing yet. And so, basically, we had a tiger exhibit still there at the truck stop, but it was empty, and had a memorial set up there for Tony, and it was really quite beautiful. The number of people, I had no idea how many people loved Tony so much, and we're having more people visit the exhibit to see his memorial than it seemed like when he was there. And it just kind of broke my heart for people to come, and that's all there was. And decided that we'd get something in there for people to enjoy, you know.
And so we got us a baby
camel and a baby coyote.
All right. Well, I'm looking at Casper the camel, and Casper's quite a vision to look at. He's going to be a big camel.
Yes, he is. He's only 5 months old right now, and of course he's as tall as I am, maybe even a little taller.
All right. Well, hold tight. We're going to continue our discussion with Mike Sandlin after the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your numbers are 877-217-5757 and 297-5633. We're spending some more time with Michael Sandlin, the owner of the Tiger Truck Stop in Grove State for 31 years. He's been large and in charge just across the river from Baton Rouge. And for three decades, he's featured tigers, the last 17 and a half years, Tony the Tiger. Tony died a few weeks ago, and there's a memorial for him. And also, there are some new additions highlighted by Casper the Camel, who's already 6 feet tall, baby camel, soon to be much larger. And, of course, some people who love animals don't think this is the best habitat for them. How do you answer that, Mike, as far as what you did with Tony and the tigers and now what you're trying to do with Casper the Camel?
Well, I answer that by saying this, you know, after all of the complaints started from animal rights organizations and certain people involved in that fanatical agenda that they have, our tigers, all of my tigers, with the exception of one, lived well past their life expectancy of 16 to 20 years in captivity. I had my first two cats, Toby and Rainbow, lived there for 18 and a half years before I retired them. And lived, I think, Toby lived to about 24 years of age, and Rainbow lived to about 23 years of age. And it's not the habitat that LSU has for Mike the Tiger, which is fantastic. I would love to have anything close to as beautiful as that. But it is certainly a nice habitat all the same. And, you know, the thing about the tigers there at the truck stop is they always had the best food money could buy. They had the best veterinary care that money could buy. And they not only had one curator that came in and fed them, like you might have at a zoo. A curator may have, you know, 50 animals that he's in charge of and has to go around and feed and clean and take care of those animals. Tony had you know, three or four people that cared for him every day and cleaned and fed him. And,
well, yeah, how, before you keep going, how do you take care of a big tiger like that?
Well, I mean, you know, the main thing is you know, feeding and, you know, veterinary care, you know, just being able to recognize when something's not quite right, and, you know, giving them some enrichment, like, you know, you might hide some spices in inside the exhibit, or bring in some pumpkins or Christmas trees, you know, at different times of the year, and maybe make some blood pops and in the summer when it's real hot, and a pool or a tire to play with and swing on, you know, and bolo balls and different things that, you know, can keep them entertained and occupied. Or you can do like Tony liked to do, and he liked to play kind of hide and seek, and you know, it's what the animals get used to. I mean, there's a movement today where the animal rights agenda pushes that, you know, no human contact with these animals, and most of your sanctuaries and zoos have adopted that ideology, which I disagree with. I mean, most of your cats here in the United States, your big cats, most of them were born here, hand-raised pets who have become accustomed to human contact, love and affection from human beings.
Well, a state judge is set to rule soon on the legality of Louisiana's big cat ban. It's a lawsuit from our guest, Mike Sandlin. He says the ban is unconstitutional. The law forbids anyone other than colleges, sanctuaries, zoos, wildlife research centers, and scientific organizations from possessing big, exotic cats. 877-217-5757 for Michael Sandlin. Henry at the Country Club of Louisiana. Hi, Henry. You're on the air with Mike Sandlin.
Well, good afternoon, good morning, Mr. Jim, and good morning, Mr. Mike. You know, I think back a few years, a friend of mine who was an attorney at the time had mentioned that if you want to get in trouble, talk about people's animals or their kids. And then the fellow ran for and got elected to family court, so you got to wonder. But I'm going to step into it a little bit. Mr. Michael, camels, part of their DNA involves walking around and running in their natural habitat. And Casper looks like you were saying earlier, like he's pretty big now at 5 months, and he's only going to do one thing, get bigger. I was wondering if you had plans to expand his area of confinement, his, I guess, prison cell or whatever, so he could have space to run as he would in his natural habitat.
Mike?
Yes, absolutely. We have quite a bit of land available, you know, to the east of the gate with, of the exhibit, which is actually where Tony's remains are. You know, Tony is still there. They never did get their hands on him. I stood up and fought and was able to keep him safely home another 9 years after all of that started. And there's some room there where we can, you know, enclose that area and give him plenty of room to run around. And our focus has turned in here to basically these two new exotic animals are a result of two things. One is my federal zoo license, the USDA Animal Welfare Act license, was up for renewal, and of course we could not keep that license, and renew that license without an exotic animal there regulated by the federal government. So that was one thing that spurred the timing of these two babies coming in. And and then, you know, as far as it being a camel and being a coati, which is a South American of origin, related to the raccoon family, and they have these big long tails, and the coati that we have is only 2 months old. So both of these baby animals are still babies. They're both being bottle fed and just now starting to wean off the bottle some, and the coati's eating fresh fruit, and the of course the camel is eating hasn't quite said started eating too much yet. He's still mainly on the bottle.
Patrick on Bluebonnet. Patrick, you're on the air with Michael Sandlin. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, I commend people like Michael Sandlin. These are private owners of cats. They're the ones that are breeding the cats. They're the ones that are taking care of them. They have the vested interest in their animals and their pets. And it's these animal rights wackos that are actually, by outlawing and regulating private cat ownership, they're basically making big cats extinct. I mean, and I support Mike Sandlin. I think we should allow private ownership, responsible private ownership of these cats, because how else are they going to, keep them alive and breed them? I mean, these animal rights people, they're basically contributing to the extinction of big cats.
All right. Thank you, Patrick. Michael, your response?
That's exactly right. Unless people can actually get up close and personal with these animals, and there's already federal regulations that prohibit, at what age you can have public contact with them and that sort of thing. But, we had 13 cubs born there at the truck stop in the first 12 years of our operation. And, a lot of it I learned hands-on as it happened, but after 30 years of raising these animals, loving and caring for them and learning all of that, when the state came in and said, what kind of education you have, and I said, well, excuse me, if you could tell me where there's a college, or a school you go to learn how to care for tigers, would you please tell me where that is? And of course, there is no school. And I said, who's to say that maybe you shouldn't be sending people to me to learn how to care for tigers?
Paul in Opelousas. Paul, you're on the air with Michael Sandlin. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning. Good to hear your voice again. Good morning, sir. Just quick question. With experts, such as the people in Vegas, Audubon Zoo, various places that had escapes, they did have the escapes, are you saying that you were better than them? And evidently you were. The comparison, because it only takes one escape to have everybody up in arms.
All right, yeah, that's a good question. In fact, Mike the Tiger has been let out of his cage a few times at LSU. Has Tony or another tiger ever gotten away at Gross Tate?
No, sir. There's never been a tiger escape at the truck stop there in Gross Tate. I used to like to tease there a little bit that, when they approached the passing of this bill and I went and talked to the legislature about keeping Tony safely home, the animal rights organizations passed this legislation through as a public safety issue, and I told the Natural Resources Committee, I said, this is a public safety issue, really? I don't think so.
All right, we're going to spend a few more minutes with Michael Sandlin, 877-217-5757 is your number if you'd like to join the conversation, and then it's author Renee Yuzzi. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Michael Sandlin, who owns the Tiger Truck Stop in Gross Tate. He lost his last tiger, Tony, a few weeks ago at the age of 17. Mike says he's bringing in more animals, and it started with Casper, the friendly white camel, who is there. And we're going to try to get to a few of you before we part company with Mike, who have been waiting patiently, starting with Ann on Bluebonnet. Hi, Ann. You're on the air with Mike Sandlin. Oh, we lost Ann. Let's try Allie, who is next up. It is Taylor in Lafayette. Taylor, good morning. You're on with Michael Sandlin. Hi, Taylor.
Hi, how are y'all?
Fine.
I was just calling because I was listening, and I think it's a great conversation that we're having about the tiger at the truck stop, but I've got to be honest and say, driving by all the time. I just felt so bad for the tiger. It just doesn't look like it has, like, the best living conditions, and I understand the owner believes he's taking the best care of him, and I'm sure they love him. But I just feel like if we were to put, like, a human in those conditions, it would be considered cruel, especially with, like, how hot it is right now outside. It's like, I don't even leave my animal, like, my dog outside. So it just feels like, you know, I don't know. Like, I would like to see the truck stop, like, become, like, something more like the Audubon Zoo or, like, Mike the Tiger in LSU. But thanks so much for taking my call.
All right. Thank you for calling and listening, Taylor in Lafayette. Mike, you've heard it. In fact, I just got an email from a gentleman identifying himself as Eric in Texas saying you keep a human being locked in a cell for years with food, but that doesn't make it okay. You've been fighting this battle, and there are those who believe this is inhumane. Did you get emotionally attached to your tigers?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's the animal rights organizations would say it was just a gimmick, and it was, you know, just an attraction and that sort of thing. And that was the idea of the tigers to begin with. It was not my idea originally. I kind of inherited the tiger from my father and brother. It was their idea to get a tiger as a mascot. We had a chain of truck stops in Texas, and I ended up bringing the tigers to Gross Tate with me when I bought the location in December of 1987. But I've never denied that. I mean, they say it's an exploitation, after 30 years, especially now, of raising, loving, and caring for these animals and seeing the joy on people's faces, especially children that got to get up and close and personal and experience these animals, either when they were babies or full grown, is what kept me going and all of these years. And it means a lot more to me than that now.
Well, we thank you for joining us. We look forward to visiting with you again. Thank you so much, Michael Sandlin.
Thank you.
And now we're joined in studio by Renee Uzi. His book is Yellow Jack, New Orleans History Revisited, the Yellow Fever Epidemic of 1853, 165 years ago in the Crescent City. Before the Civil War, there was a yellow fever epidemic. And Renee, you have delved into this quite intensely. It's a big book. How did you get involved in this one?
Well, Jim, I began writing just a short story in 2003, believe it or not, and then Katrina hit it in 2005, and I was moved to Baton Rouge, and then I was diagnosed with leukemia and other health issues and so forth, but I just kept moving along with the book. It took 15 years to get it where we are today. And I was lucky enough to meet Mr. Jim Brown, a publisher here in Baton Rouge, who took care of getting the book printed for me. And so here we are. Yeah, I was just intrigued with the people of New Orleans and the tenacity of the citizens during these epidemics, which lasted actually for 71 years. They endured that summer after summer.
Well, it's a story that most people are probably unfamiliar with, and I'm sure the research of in doing this book was extensive.
It was, yeah, and that's really what made the book grow. Again, when I started, it was just 8 handwritten pages of a short story about Plaquemine Parish. It was a location there that I was interested in. And I picked up the 8 pages 3 days later, and I said, well, gee, I think I can add a few more pages. And and so I did, and then I did a little more research, and that research brought me into New Orleans and taught me about the yellow fever epidemics there and the misery that it brought along with it.
The book is Yellow Jack, New Orleans History Revisited, the Yellow Fever Epidemic of 1853. How widespread was this?
Oh, well, I mean, it was New Orleans and all the outlying parishes. Of course, there wasn't a lot of a population in the outlying parishes back in the day, but it came in New Orleans in the early 1800s, and 1798, actually, and just ripped through to from oh my God, it was just incredible, incredible. But what I did with the book was, after so much reading and so much research, is Yellow Jack is actually about Louisiana and federal political corruption.
Because there were legal maneuverings as a result of this.
Absolutely. And I set the story against the backdrop, the political story against the backdrop of the 1853 epidemic. There was a lot of turmoil going on down there. Of course, politically, economically, socially, it was, mm-hmm. it was just really a mess.
9,000 people died.
In that particular year, just 1853. Now, some historians say up to 14,000. I've read that before.
Can you imagine if that were to happen today, and of course a much larger population, we would be national, international news. But most people, as I stated, even those of us who are from New Orleans and Louisiana, we don't know a whole lot about this. But you've written a big book about it. And when I say a big book, Renee went all out. It's about 600 pages, and he tells the story. But as noted, it involves some political chicanery as well.
Absolutely, yes, both in 1856 and in 2007. So I bring the political issues full circle at the end of the book in a trial because of a government cover-up in 1856, actually, that I write in the story. So the trial is quite intense at the end. It reveals murder and political corruption, of course, and just so much more at the end of the book.
You note that in 1855, Mayor Oliver Devereaux of New Orleans wrote into law a plan for a quarantine at the mouth of the Mississippi River. How did this work?
Well, this is actually fictional. This is a fictional story. So I, after all the research mm-hmm. that I did, all the reading that I did, I just made the story what I assumed would have been like down there. Again, socially and economically.
My impression is that it is based
absolutely
on truth.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, it's you've combined a lot of ingredients. That I guess that's why it's a big book as far as what happened, what your imagination states,
yeah.
and contemporary Louisiana, which, as you know, is occasionally rife with politics.
Right.
So in February of 2007, we're bringing it up a long time, more than 100 years, you get into an intense court proceeding. What happens then?
Well, of course I can't give you the punchline, but it's very intense in court proceedings. In 1856, I write a cover-up of the U.S. government, and when the land gets back into the hands of the rightful owner, there is actually a reunion that he plans down at the mouth of the river on the land that was seized by the government in 1856. And when he does, all the family shows, and it's a wonderful time by all. And but 2 days later, he gets phone calls from his family telling him that some of the family members become extremely ill, and some actually die. So he decides, Carl Beckworth is the owner of the land, decides to file suit against the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I end it in 2007.
Well, in George Augustine's History of Yellow Fever, New Orleans, he notes that as many as 41,000 people may have died from the scourge of yellow fever in about 75 years. But as you note, the high point was around... the 1853 period, 1853, 54, 55, and in 1858 as well.
That's right.
1858, almost 5,000 people died.
Correct.
And you have battled back from a few maladies.
Yeah, yeah. At 2000, I was diagnosed with lupus. And at the time, I wasn't a very prayerful guy, but I was able to wish that away. And after years of medication, I calmed myself down and took worry out of my vocabulary. And today, in fact, as of 2006, I stopped taking the medicine for lupus, and I have no symptoms, which was quite remarkable. I know so many people that died with lupus and had many, many issues with it. So I was just fortunate and thankful for that. And then in 2006 came along leukemia, which was quite a blow, actually, just 6 months after Katrina. But I will say this, there's always hope. 9 weeks ago today, my doctor told me that I was cured. So I had been through the chemotherapies and other medications.
Well, we're glad you're alive and well, and a book that is available for public consumption, Yellow Jack, from Renee Uzee. That's Uzee. Congratulations on your work. And we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. We're slated to begin tomorrow's discussion with the former mayor, president of East Baton Rouge Parish, the Honorable Melvin Kip Holden. 12 years he led our city. Until tomorrow, for Allie and Becca, I'm Jim. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.